afternoon.
Let's call the meeting of the Senate State Affairs Committee to order. It is approximately 3:31 p.m. on Thursday, March 16th. Let the record show that we have a quorum to do business. Present, Senator Giesel, Senator Wilson, Senator Egan, Senator Coghill, and myself, Senator Dunleavy. Purpose of our meeting today, review of governor appointees, Luis Nieves, Sergeant Luis Nieves, Alaska Public Standards Council, Rhonda Wallace, Alaska Police Standards Council, Rhonda Wallace, Alaska Police Standards Council. The next item of business after that would be the introduction of HB 3, National Guard Leave Reemployment Rights, prime sponsor, Representative Tuck. So we're going to turn to the appointees. The mission of the Alaska Police Standards Commission is to produce and maintain a highly trained and positively motivated professional capable of meeting contemporary law enforcement standards of performance. So we're going to first go to Sergeant Luis Nieves. If I'm pronouncing your name incorrectly, please correct me. And we will have you introduce yourself for the record. And you can begin your testimony in terms of explaining a little bit about yourself and why you wish to be appointed, and then we'll most likely ask you a series of questions. So, Sergeant, are you online?
Yes, I am.
Could you please pronounce your name, state your name for the record, and then give us some background on yourself?
Yes, my name is Luis Nieves. It's Spanish for snow, so I guess it's an appropriate last name to be living up here in Alaska.
Yeah.
I am originally from Queens, New York, and made my way through military and federal law enforcement up to Alaska through the U.S. Coast Guard, fell in love with the state, and made a determination that it'd be a great place to raise my children, raise my family. I've been in Alaska since 2004. I've been an Alaska State Trooper since 2006. I have served the state of Alaska as both a member of the Maritime Safety Security Team, which was stationed out of Anchorage for the U.S. Coast Guard, which provided protection for our maritime infrastructure. I then met some troopers that influenced me into joining what I feel to be one of the best agencies in the nation. And I became an Alaska State Trooper in 2006. As an Alaska State Trooper, I've served the communities of the Mat-Su Valley as a member of patrol, the DUI enforcement team, and then an investigator for the Child Abuse Investigations Unit. I also certified as a crisis negotiator. I then transferred out to Kotzebue and served the people of the Northwest Arctic Borough as an oversight trooper for the village of Selowik and the other villages in that region. I was then promoted to the rank of sergeant and became the recruiter for the Department of Public Safety, in essence, a recruiter for the state of Alaska, due to the fact that it seems like about 80% of our applicants come from out of state. And we've worked to try to fix that, but that's basically the fact of the matter when it comes to law enforcement recruiting in the state of Alaska, just due to our population. And I transferred to Anchorage Judicial Services, where I supervised court security and movement of prisoners to and from court, and also provided protection for the judges and their staff. I then transferred out to Bristol Bay, where I am now, and I am the Bristol Bay supervisor. I supervise law enforcement, search and rescue for the Bristol Bay region, and I also oversee the Aleutian chain. I've been serving on the Alaska Police Standards Council since 2013. I have served as both the chairman and the vice chairman of the council. I believe that the council acts as essentially the conscience of law enforcement for the state of Alaska. I'm very proud of what we've done on the council. I believe that we do promote professionalism. We do promote the best law enforcement training and the best standards in the nation. I look forward to hopefully receiving your recommendation for further retention on the council.
Thank you. And Sergeant, one last time for myself, please pronounce your name because we're going to start asking you a few questions.
It's Luis Nieves.
Nieves, thank you. So Sergeant Nieves was first appointed on 6-1-2013, reappointed on 3-1-2017. Term expires 3-1-2021. Currently serving as the Vice Chairman of the Council. Do we have questions for members of the committee for Sergeant Nieves? Senator Cockhill?
Thank you. First of all, Luis, thank you for being willing to serve and serving. Probably because of your perspective of interviewing people, doing some of the training, and now working in some of the rural areas, are the things that you have seen that would be recommendations to training that we might do better because of people coming in from out of state, or is that something that we do fairly well at this point?
I think we could. I believe that we do that very well right now. There's always room for improvement. But I think what we really need to improve on is just promoting law enforcement within the state. That was my, that seemed to be one of my, my missions when I was the department recruiter, trying to encourage young kids in the Mat-Su Valley, young kids in Kotzebue and rural Alaska to apply to be law enforcement officers in our state. I'm very proud of the out-of-state applicants that have come and joined our police force here in the state of Alaska, but there is no better asset than somebody that's homegrown that already understands what they're getting into. Does that answer your question?
Yes, and thank you, Mr. Chairman, if I may.
Sure, Senator Cockhill.
First of all, for your service in the military, and it looks like you're looking at the ocean again down there, so I imagine you feel comfortable there. But I think you're a pretty good example of people who came into our forces from really military work. And is that still a typical thing that military folks are part of our recruiting, or is that coming from broader areas now?
Well, it's been a while, sir. It's been a while since I've been in recruitment, but I've been trying to keep my hand on the pulse. It seems like our military, they're used to moving. I can only speak, frankly, from the Alaska State Trooper point of view, where troopers are required to move around the state. And military personnel, typically, their families, their spouses, because when we recruit a law enforcement officer in the state of Alaska, we're recruiting their family as well. And that's something that we had to learn pretty quickly when we did recruitment, because we weren't just putting a pitch out to serve the state of Alaska to an individual. We're putting that pitch out to the entire family, to that spouse that's going to be willing to drag their children to Bethel and Kotzebue and Dillingham and Aniak and all these other remote locations throughout the state. And military seem to be accustomed to that, a lot more moving. However, I will say that we have found, though, when you have military personnel near the end of their career, sometimes families kind of tapped out on moving. So it seems that we need to focus on selling the adventure of Alaska and the fact that, you know, it's so diverse and there's so many responsibilities and so many great things that you can be doing. And, you know, and that the rural Alaska is not this dangerous place that is painted for some of the families that are being recruited. You know, I used to have families that were absolutely terrified of going to Bethel or other places because of rumors that they heard instead of basing it on actual facts and actually speaking to people from that region. Did I answer your question, sir?
Yes, you did. And I have a friend that lives in Selawik, and they quite often have had some very dramatic things happen out there, but the people are just wonderful people. And so I kind of understand that. Probably because of the family situation, is there anything in the Police Standard Council that answers when behavior emanates from family problems, or is that something that's dealt with by the force very differently?
Could you kind of clarify that question for me in terms of, are you talking from speaking from a recruitment standpoint or from actual family problems, like a...
Yeah, just something that might come as a matter of complaint because somebody's having family problems that would come before the Police Standards Council.
Unless it was a crime, sir, typically that's at the agency level. The agencies are really responsible for, many of the agencies pride themselves on recruitment, but we're not really good at retention sometimes, and that's something that we could work on. And I don't know that that's something that council can do on its own. That would be a team effort with all the chiefs and do the other associations, the Association of Chiefs of Police and the other groups within the state of Alaska. I know that our biggest success is when we partner with the local communities for retention and recruitment and stuff. But in terms of family issues, that's typically at the department level and their employer, their city, their HR, and any services that they offer.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Questions for members of the committee? Seeing none. Thank you, Sergeant. We're going to next move on to Rhonda Wallace. Chief Wallace was first appointed on 5/31/2016. Term expires 3/1/2019. Chief Wallace, could you please state your name for the record and begin with your opening remarks, please?
Yes, sir. My name is Rhonda Wallace. And to begin with, thank you for your time today. I appreciate the opportunity to be able to speak. And my opening remarks, and I think the question posed earlier was why we'd want to serve on the board. And I'll begin with, I've been in this career field now for 18 and a half years, and I have proudly served the citizens of my community for that entire time. And I strongly believe in the law enforcement mission. And in that, I believe you cannot have law without law enforcement, and you cannot have law enforcement officers without the laws to guide them. State of Alaska has in place those regulations which govern the conduct and the training of those who enforce our laws, being police officers, probation, and parole officers and correctional officers. And we all must be held to the highest of those standards. If confirmed by the Senate State Affairs Committee, I can provide, along with the others who serve, advice, oversight, and direction for the executive director on issues brought before the board. I can use my experience in law enforcement and expertise in conducting investigations to make informed decisions based upon the facts presented when hearing cases that come before the council. And I take very seriously cases of misconduct, especially where an employer has requested decertification, where a violation has been so egregious, decertification is warranted. The council, being made up of 13 members, handpicked by the governor and affirmed by the legislature, these are trustworthy, knowledgeable, well-balanced professionals whose primary mission is the protection of the citizens of Alaska. And in that, I believe I offer high-level professionalism that would complement the council and their mission. And I would be honored to serve alongside them in that mission and serve the citizens of Alaska if confirmed.
Thank you. Questions from members of the committee? Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chief Wallace, when did you start the what year did you start as police chief of Kodiak?
Sir, I started in 2013 as the police chief.
Thank you.
Additional questions from members of the committee? Senator Giesel.
Thank you. Chief Wallace, I see that the commission meets twice a year. It looks like December and May or June. How many of those meetings have you attended of the council?
I have attended one telephonic hearing and then one in-person hearing.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So you have a sense of what the responsibilities are and the type of work?
Yes, ma'am, I do.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Additional questions for members of the committee? Seeing none, we're going to now open this to public testimony on these governor appointees. Public testimony is open. Is there anyone online? Is there anyone here in Juneau that wishes to testify on the appointees? Seeing none, public testimony is closed. I'll now read the appointee committee report that we will shortly. Senator Diesel?
Mr. Chairman, could I just make one comment? I just want to thank Sergeant Nieves and Chief Wallace. This is difficult work, being law enforcement in our state, and I appreciate their service.
Thank you. So at this point, I'll read the appointee committee report that we will shortly sign. In accordance with AS 3905080, the Senate State Affairs Committee reviewed the filing and recommends the appointments to be forwarded to a joint session for consideration. Sergeant Luis Nieves, Alaska Police Standards Council. Chief Rhonda Wallace, Alaska Police Standards Council. This does not reflect an intent by any of the members to vote for or against the confirmation of the individual during any further sessions. With that, we'll take a brief at ease and sign the documents. Thank you. Back in session with the Senate State Affairs Committee. Next, we're going to turn to HB 3, National Guard Leave Reemployment Rights. This is a bill from Representative Tuck. He's the prime sponsor. Today, we have his staff, Kendra Kloster, to walk us through the bill. If you can state your name for the record and begin your testimony, that would be great.
Kendra Kloster, staff to Representative Chris Tuck. I appreciate you letting me stand in on his behalf. House Bill 3 seeks to correct a deficiency in employment protections for Alaskans who serve in the National Guard. This is a nationwide effort by the Department of Defense to ensure that members who belong to a National Guard of all 50 states, and regardless of where their service location is, that they have reemployment rights for their jobs here in Alaska. As you probably know, the National Guard is a hybrid state and federal entity. So when National Guard members are called up by the president, they are under the Uniformed Services Employment and Reemployment Rights Act, which is called USERRA. And however, when they are called in by the governor, we need to have state statutes which cover their reemployment rights, which we have currently. However, there is a spot that we are missing for Alaskans who serve in other National Guards. And so some of our Alaskans, like, we know of 33 currently. However, this is a self-reported number, so there could be many more out there, we're just not sure, that serve in other National Guards. So we want to make sure that they have the same reemployment rights if they get called to service. Some of the reasons that they may belong to another National Guard could be education. If they're a student, they may be transferring up to Alaska, and it can take up to 11 months for them to transfer their National Guard service to Alaska. There's also additional training opportunities down in the lower 48 National Guards that Alaska just does not have. And I know Mr. Dole is here and can elaborate on that a little bit more. So House Bill 3, so far 29 other states have passed similar legislation, and 5 others are considering it this year as well. And I am available for any questions.
Thank you. Questions from members of the committee at this point? I was going to say, Senator Coghill, you have a question?
Yeah, I mean, I think you started answering it. Why? So this would require, though, they be a resident of the state. Is that what I understand?
Senator Coghill, through the chair, that is correct.
So, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator Coghill.
Residency requirement based on what? So, for example, I had my son-in-law went out to Mississippi to do flying for the Air National Guard. I think he was out there just a little over a year, but he did retain his job up here because he was deployed to training from Alaska but it was under training under another National Guard unit. Would that have qualified under our present statute, or would that be required that they would have to answer it under this statute?
Senator Coghill, through the chair, let me just make sure I have this correct. So he was serving in Alaska resident serving into another National Guard in the lower 48.
As far as I know, he was lent for training purposes. He was down in Mississippi flying, getting his pilot's license for our Air National Guard usage. So the agreement was he'd come back and fly, but the unit was not an Alaska National Guard or Air National Guard, I'm sorry. So, but his employer did keep his place reserved at that point. So, and I was just wondering if it was because of the law that we had, or if it was just because of the goodness of that particular employer.
Senator Coghill, through the chair, it sounds like that it would be under this bill, actually, where he would be covered, but I don't know of any circumstances at this point where employers have said, no, you cannot have your job back. Not to say I don't know if that's happened or not, but it seems like, you know, Alaska's been very friendly to our individuals, our service members who are serving. But we just think that this is an important step to cover those in case a certain circumstance may come. We hope that we wouldn't have to put in a bill because it happened to someone. So we want to make sure that, you know, they are covered if they have to get called to duty in another location.
Senator?
When I first read this, my immediate concern said, okay, are we going to have somebody hold a spot in Alaska while they're serving in, just name the state, Oklahoma, for the next 10 years? So if they go full-time guard in Oklahoma, for example, you know, obviously I think there was a relief, but if they took a full-time job, do they still qualify as a resident here?
Senator Coghill, through the chair, under this bill, they would have to be an Alaska resident. But we do also have a provision in here, which we added in the Military and Veterans Affairs Committee, which says that if circumstances change for the business, for them when their individuals are coming back, if there's challenges on having them, we don't want to put a burden on the business at the same time. So some of the things that they could do is hire someone on contract if they need to fill that position while the individual is gone, or if when the person comes back that if it has changed, let's say that they're a small business and they went from 50 people down to 20 and that just their position just no longer exists. So there are protections in there for the businesses. But also, I think Bob Dole can talk more about this, but a lot of times in the circumstances is people are going away for not long extended periods of time with the National Guard. I know that they've been called away by the president, and however they would be covered under USERRA for that if they're going overseas. So a lot of times this is, you know, for their drills and doing the trainings and whatnot. But I would like to have Bob Dole speak on that a little bit more, and I think he can provide you some really good information.
It would be nice, Mr. Chairman, because if somebody is increasing their lot in the Guard and we're keeping a job here, but they're increasing their lot there, I wonder how long we want to do that. So, yeah, we can talk about that.
Mr. Dole, can you come up, please? State your name for the record, who you're with, and then be prepared to answer questions.
For the record, Deputy Commissioner Bob Dole, State of Alaska, Department of Military and Veterans Affairs.
Thank you. Questions from members of the committee? Senator Coghill?
So I try to see as I can get as clear as possible. We're mandating, with some exception, that somebody hold a job. I don't know the process probably as well as I should, but I know that a guard unit might be able to employ somebody on a full-time guard basis in another state. Would that apply this, or would it be those deployments from the state as they retain their residency? How would we see that?
Through the chair, Senator Coghill, there's basically three different types of duty status. Allow me a brief digression here. Title 10 United States Code is when we deploy a guardsman to go overseas and do things that are necessary to defend this great nation. Title 32 United States Code is where a guardsman is training both in the state on his weekend drills or flying sorties around Eielson for the C-17s to hook up to, in the case of your son-in-law, or if he's going to another state to train. And that status, as a federal status, he would come under USERRA, the federal laws. This would not deal with it. In most cases, it's conceivable that a guardsman who was a member of another state's guard could be put into a state active duty to train in that other state. Frankly, we have never heard of it. Where state active duty is used primarily is when a guardsman is answering a call of the governor. That's used for flood response. It's used for tornadoes, earthquakes, the usual disasters out there. In the southeast U.S., every year they mobilize tens of thousands of guardsmen into state active duty, generally for a few days for a given storm. The bulk of your state active duty tours are 72 hours or less. After Katrina, things went longer because of the recovery period. But by and large, we're talking about a question of days here. Under the federal law, which is not the state one before you here, there is a limit that the total time you can be away from a job and still have reemployment rights is 5 years. That's in one deployment or that's in five deployments. So we don't have that person just tying up a position forever. That is not in the state version as is. I guess with state active duty, we're not aware of anyone ever running it out that far. Does that address your concerns, sir?
That's part of it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The other thing is, it just caught my attention that it was going to be somebody serving in another guard unit in another state under that state's law. And so that began to ask the question. I know that we have some guardsmen in both in the Army and the Air Force who are full-time support service people. There's probably not any way that they would fall into this. And so that's what I was wondering. Would they go and be another full-time person, still try to reclaim residency here? I'm just wondering how that system could be gamed, if at all.
Through the chair, Senator Coghill, for somebody working full-time in the National Guard of another state, they're working under Title 32 United States Code. It will be under the federal protections to the extent they exist. This bill will not impact it.
That was kind of the question, is that I was wondering how far you could step out into that world, and it's a pretty clear world. Title 32 is a pretty clear world then. Okay. All right. Okay. Obviously, I didn't know, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Senator Wilson.
Yes, thank you. I just have a question on the bill on page 2, I guess line 2 and line 5. Would you need to state active in front of that, so active National Guard service in another state?
Through the chair, Sandra Wilson, active state service is what we're calling state active duty, as these protections would only apply when you were in a specific duty status there for performing that disaster response role.
And I understand that, but on the other pages, it does state to this as, like on page 1, line 12, it says, or active National Guard service in another state, just for continuity. Because as I read on the second page, it just says, or National Guard service in another state. It doesn't really clarify as active.
Senator Wilson, through the chair, as I'm looking at page 2, just comparing the two, page 2, line 2, a result of active state service or National Guard service in another state. When I have talked with the drafters before, they said that active would cover both the active state service and also into that next line of the National Guard, and that would be covered. But I can for sure double check and run that by them to make sure.
Yes, please.
Not a problem.
Thank you. Additional questions? Okay. I think online we have, if I mispronounce your name, I apologize. Is it Mark Sansucci online?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Hi, Senator Dunleavy, Mr. Chair, and committee members. For the record, my name is Mark Sansucci. I am the Department of Defense Regional Liaison for Military Families, and I can't be any more eloquent than Kendra has been and then Secretary Dole has been. I know Senator Coghill and his military background, and I listened to his question there, and through the chair, you know, this is about a person who might be like a barista in a private company who gets called to Washington State because they're in Washington State's National Guard to fight a forest fire. And while they're gone, they get fired by their employer, private employer. And the protection here is only to do that kind of thing. And you have, as Kendra said, there are 33 of the only, those are the only ones who self-reported, but I could run down the 19 states that Alaskans are actually in the military in other states for, but I don't want to waste your time. So it really is about protecting those people in private employment who get called for things like forest fires and that kind of thing and have a private employer who wants to fire them. And so 29 states have done it. Ohio passed it this year. 5 other states are doing it. And that's essentially what it is. And I always wrestle after Commissioner Dole and Kendra how I can add any value, and I really can't. It's a zero fiscal note situation, and really wish that Alaska would join the other states to do this. So I stand for any questions.
Questions from members of the committee.
But he did a pretty eloquent job, Mr. Sansucci. I think you did a very good job of adding value, so that was well said.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Sansucci.
Welcome.
Next, we're going on to Brian Duffy. He's available for questions, and he's with the Department of Military and Veteran Affairs. Are there questions for Mr. Brian Duffy? Mr. Duffy, can you just state your name for the record and who you're with? Mr. Duffy, are you online? Mr. Duffy in Anchorage, are you online? Okay. You may want to unmute your mic at the LIO. It could come back. Any additional questions for the folks testifying today? Okay, what we're going to do is lay the bill off the side for further consideration, and I think there's a question or two that as Kloster was going to take a look at for a question related to what Senator Wilson had asked. So with that, we're going to lay the bill off to the side. Our next meeting is going to be Tuesday, March 21st at 3:30 p.m. We'll be looking at SB 34, Driver's License and ID Cards and Real ID Act, HB 16, Driver's License Requirement, Disability ID, and Train. So with that, we are adjourned.